The Spotlight.
Kicking off his first state visit to China since taking office in January, the Brazilian President Lula da Silva did not hold back his feelings. He called on developing countries to work towards replacing the U.S. dollar with their own currencies in international trade. He also called for BRICS countries to come up with their own alternative currency for use in trade. Is this a further blow to the U.S. and the dollar dominance? In this edition of The Spotlight, we will look at the significance of Latin America's number one economy, teaming up with the world's soon-to-be number one economy in the world, namely China, and what impact that would have on the world economy, in particular, the U.S. First, let me introduce our guest for this edition of the program. Gilbert Doctor, our independent international affairs analyst, joins us from Brussels. Also joining us is Matthew Everett, who's a senior fellow at the American University in Moscow, joining us from Montreal.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Gentlemen, welcome to you both. Gilbert Doctor, I'll first over to you. This visit obviously is quite a stark contrast in terms of the sentiment that is behind Lula da Silva compared to the former President Bolsonaro, who was keen to keep a relative distance towards China, especially when it comes to the foreign policy arena, which we'll get to later. How big a deal is this for Latin America's number one economy to team up with China, soon to be the number one economy in the world?
Oh, it's a very big deal. And the particular emphasis placed on de-dollarization is in line with many other similar developments across the world in the last few weeks. This is a kind of tidal wave of the formerly called the Third World or the countries that are non-aligned. They have, or now it's the popular word for this is the Global South, has been expressing itself in favor of a more democratic economic power, distribution of economic power across the world, for which reserve currencies are an important part of the structure. And what we have here is still, until now, a relatively small change in the percentage of trading across the globe that is done in non-dollar currencies. But in the case of the yuan, renminbi, it has gone up, almost doubled in the last few months. Nonetheless, we're speaking about 4 or 5% of the global trade, and the United States still having something like 70 or 80% of global trade. So it's a long way to go. However, de-dollarization has several dimensions, and I hope we can get into that later in this discussion.
I hope so, too. Matthew Everett, some of the questions asked by Lula. Every night I ask myself, why do all countries have to base their trade on the dollar? Why can't we do trade based on our own currencies? Who was it that decided that the dollar was the currency after the disappearance of the gold standard? Why is Lula asking these questions now? And what do you think? Is he asking the right questions?
I think that he is definitely asking the right questions, which have been on everyone's mind. And it has been sort of the elephant in the room that no one was allowed to speak about for the past 50, 60 years, especially. Which is that, I mean, why is it ultimately that we, and here I use the term we in the broad sense, but why should nations of the world who are doing bilateral agreements with each other utilize the dollars, the U.S. dollars, which have no interest in those trade agreements going forward? and are tied in many cases to speculative interests, were able to use the floating exchange rate system upon which the dollar was pegged after it was floated from the gold reserve standard back in 1971 as a tool for speculation. This creates a lot of instability. It opens up the door to vulture funds, people like George Soros, who made a killing literally for decades off of speculating on commodities, on other forms, but especially currencies, in order to intentionally destabilize target governments that are maybe looking out a little bit too much for the sovereign interests of their people. So the fact that right now you have a very clear case of the U.S. dollar as an overbloated speculative debt-based weapon, which is in the middle of collapsing, has given people, I think, a lot of courage that they would not have normally had a decade ago to say what Lula
in the middle of collapsing?
Xi Jinping and others are saying. Yeah.
Why would you say it's in the middle of collapsing?
Well, the U.S. has already moved its debt ceiling up. I think it's $31 trillion at this point. There's a veritable crisis right now. We don't know if the U.S. dollar is going to default or not. We know also that money printing didn't end in 2009. There's been an ongoing quantitative easing policy that has been in the trillions and trillions, justifying a Wall Street City of London-directed bubble of derivatives that are something like 20 times larger than the global measurable GDP accumulatively, which itself, derivatives didn't even really exist in a meaningful way 30 years ago. This was created as a metastasizing cancer in an age of unbounded speculation and deregulation. So this is a perfect storm of chaos that's going to be ripping apart the transatlantic economy if nothing systemic is done.
Well, Gilbert Doctor, can you please expand more to us what you said, which I thought perhaps was one of the highlights of your previous statements there, when you said a more democratic form of power needs to be more used in reference to, of course, money and trade in general. What is so non-democratic about the dollar, and will this more democratic form of power actually come into being based on, I don't know, maybe the yuan coming into strength? You tell us what you think.
Well, there are several dimensions, as I said, to this question. One is goods are denominated in, and what currency is used to denominate the value of goods that are in commercial exchange across the world. That is one dimension. Another dimension is what currencies are used on the commodity exchanges, which commodities exchanges are dominating given commodities. As regards commodities, there are many commodities that have a heavy weight in global trade. The most significant one, of course, is hydrocarbons, and that means particularly oil. When we go back to 1971 and what changed in the world after that, how the United States and the dollar came to be so dominant, there's a word that comes to mind, and that is the petrodollar. The hydrocarbons were, from that time on, denominated in dollars, and that became the fundamental backbone of the dollar strength, for which other commodities and other goods exchanges were denominated. One other aspect of this, which nobody talks about, is the information flow. Since almost all of the trading based in dollars is passing through American banks, the United States government has had an information flow that is quite unbelievable. There's a big complaint about Huawei and how the Chinese could possibly have access to the personal information of the users of Huawei telecommunication systems. The same issue comes up with TikTok. However, this is nothing compared to the information flow about who is selling what to whom that the United States possesses through the very fact of all transactions going through American banks. That is another dimension that people don't talk about much. The sensitivity of these issues to the United States has been quite unbelievable. If we go back, we saw this past week on his interview given on the plane from which he returned from his China visit to France. Emmanuel Macron said that we should de-dollarize. We shouldn't be so dependent on the dollar. Now, let's go back a bit in history. In 2010, when he was still the president of the world of the IMF, Strauss-Kahn was suspected by his American friends, colleagues, and those who are listening to him for intelligence purposes. He was suspected of being anti-dollar. He was promoting the special drawing rights as an alternative to the dollar in settling world trade. For that, on that very basis, he was framed in the United States. He was entrapped in a hotel scandal, which brought him before the justice wearing handcuffs and nearly sent him off to a prison sentence. He was removed from the French presidential race, where he was a leading candidate being proposed by the socialists.
Sure.
This type of American intervention in French politics has continued up through the race that brought Macron to his president position 6 years ago. Well, this was so sensitive to the United States that the dollar could be exposed in the way that Strauss-Kahn was thinking of doing, that they brought down the French government. And here we have Macron speaking liberally about it, because everybody is speaking liberally about de-dollarization.
They are. That's true. Let's go to one of the statements there made, Matthew, from Gilbert Doctorow about the banking structure. The reason why I want to have you elaborate on this a little bit more is because the Brazilian president has actually called on the developing countries to go for replacing the dollar with their own currencies. BRICS to have a currency to finance trade relations between those countries requires a financial system that's has a structure, something that's different than what's being used currently. Is that feasible? And is that something that is going to happen? Of course, we have to wait. All eyes are going to be on South Africa when the BRICS meet. But I think it's going to be somewhat feasible because, what do you know? The former Brazilian president, Dilma Rousseff, is the head of the new development bank. Is that a coincidence?
Yeah. No, yeah. I mean, it's not only feasible, it's absolutely necessary if humanity is going to have a future. I mean, it simply is the case that it has to come online if we're going to be able to make it through the current storms that are threatening to tear apart civilization in a variety of ways. So the fact is that Lula has been somebody who, from a very early stage, many years ago, was a big part of bringing online the new development bank, the BRICS Bank, back in 2014. It had a very strong manifesto and mandate at the Fortaleza Conference in Brazil in order to provide long-term low-interest credit for the purpose of large-scale development, ending hunger, ending poverty, creating stability. That was very clearly the need and the purpose. And unfortunately, over the past 7 or 8 years, it hasn't been permitted to express its own mandate, largely because, the choice, for whatever reason, was made to still adopt overall Western IMF-directed standards of banking and financial behavior. And so it hasn't really permitted itself to be the type of offensive instrument for real development. Ironically, the way the IMF and World Bank back in 1944 were originally designed, I believe, by Franklin Roosevelt and Henry Wallace and his allies to provide that type of anti-colonial long-term development to internationalize the successful economic model of the New Deal that had worked so well in America that was being offered to India, Africa, China, South America. Brazil was supposed to be a big recipient as part of the Four Freedoms vision of Franklin Roosevelt to create a world without hunger, without poverty, and for mutual win-win development. That wasn't permitted when Roosevelt died a bit too early. His enemies amongst the deep state took control. We know that story. But I think today we're at a point where the time has yet come once again for this type of renewal of real human-directed banking that prioritizes necessity and humanity and the general good over private, interests, which shouldn't be crushed, but at the same time should be put in their proper sphere of priorities, which is what you see from the Eurasian orientation of finance.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Sure. Well, to maybe distance a little bit from the economics of this all, Gilbert Doctorow, we're looking at, obviously, the Chinese leader welcoming Lula the way that he has, especially with the business delegation. But I'm guessing that Xi Jinping is going to be keen to have asked the Brazilian president if he's so interested in this trade relationship with China. For the large part, that he's going to want some kind of backing for China's foreign policy initiatives. I'm guessing that that's something that they've discussed and that China's probably somewhat insistent on that. What arenas do you think the Chinese president would focus on in his talks with Lula when it comes to backing China on these foreign policy initiatives?
Well, the focus, of course, is on BRICS. BRICS is one of the two vehicles or platforms that China is using to reorganize the management of world affairs. It is one of two boards of directors where China has its key seat. The other, of course, is the Shanghai Cooperation Organization, which is primarily about security. I don't believe that President Xi is going to be discussing with Lula very much about security. It is primarily economics that they will discuss because the importance, the prominence of Brazil is as a founder of BRICS. So the foreign policy statements that they make will have to be carefully coordinated, because Brazil has been less accommodative towards Russia on the Ukraine war than China has been. And that has to be remarked, where Brazil stood in the United Nations General Assembly vote that was proposed by the United States to censure Russia. It was not on the side of the angels. That is certainly going to be a topic, but whether or not she will succeed in moving Lula on that, I don't.
Well, the headline that I'd like you to comment on, Matthew, read that, let me read it, Xi and Lula to steer new future for China-Brazil ties from strategic perspective, in which it would involve schemes to create an alternative international governance system in reference to the new world order, to those dominated by the U.S. So that's cutting it right to the chase. It's right there in black and white, this particular headline, and, of course, the subtitle to it. Do you think that that's really something that's going on?
That is absolutely what is going on. And the fact is that there will be no return to normal. It was completely foreseeable for those who were looking at the right variables many, many years ago that this financial system was set up not necessarily to succeed, but with the seeds of its own destruction built into it that could be triggered either by accident or by intent and design, which is now unfolding. And things are going to be moving very, very fast. We're already in an accelerated phase of the meltdown, but things are going to be moving increasingly faster and faster. And the fact is we will be getting a new system, a new operating system will emerge. The question is whether that system is going to operate upon principles that value productivity, that value the overcoming of limits to growth, the way Sergei Glazyev and many other sane, competent adults in the room have been speaking about, which, you know, humanity is always a species which encounters limits based on the absence of resources, the ignorance to certain discoveries of nature that we haven't made yet. There will always be pressures on what population we can sustain, but whether or not you value as a system, whether the idea that human beings can be encouraged to make those discoveries and apply those new technologies to allow for a higher quality of life at more people, or whether you choose to create scarcity and adapt to those limits by destroying the means of creative change, which is unfortunately too much of the Kool-Aid that has been drank by the technocrats trying to manage the New World Order since 1992 especially, that will create two different worlds. And I think the Russia, China, Iran, Brazil orientation right now is much more in harmony with a society of dignity that's based upon making investments and economic behavior support the increasing productivity and the needs for those the qualitative and quantitative growths of the species in a position of harmony, finding points of cooperation instead of divide. That's much more a legitimate form of business and banking than anything we have seen, especially since John F. Kennedy was murdered 60 years ago in the West.
Well, it seems
but we will
like
get a new system, yes.
Indeed. Well, it's Gilbert Doctorow, finally, it seems like the U.S., I don't want to say is blindsided, but the U.S. is definitely dealing with, as you said, a tidal wave of de-dollarization, for example. We're looking at the Brazilian president and, of course, the sentiment that he has relayed. The French president saying that, you know, de-dollarization needs to take place. India, you have the ASEAN countries who are contemplating on putting aside the dollar and euro, for that matter. How is the U.S. going to be able to respond to all these countries? I mean, one of the faults that many countries have accused the U.S. of is using the dollar as a weapon. U.S. can't go around and sanction all these countries now. What kind of reaction may we expect from the U.S.?
Global chaos. That is the U.S. foreign policy today. It didn't start yesterday. It goes back to the 1990s. But it is being put in high gear today. There are hotspots across the globe and on all continents which are being actively heated up by the United States on a conscious policy of, as I said, global chaos. And they hope to destabilize large parts of the world in a divide and conquer approach. That is their response. Very sad and very dangerous for us all.
All right, I can give you the same question. 30 seconds, Matthew Everett. Go ahead.
I unfortunately agree. The arsonists are rampant, and they're doubling down on the only thing that they know how to do, which is burn and destroy when they're not in command of the script. And the script has changed from the one that they thought they were operating on back in the 90s or even 2011. And so chaos is the pathway being chosen right now. Whether or not the forces in the business community and diplomacy and citizen organizing have the power to overthrow that and bring about some sanity or not, I don't know yet.
Thank you for that. Matthew Everett, Senior Fellow at the American University in Moscow. Gilbert Doctorow, many thanks. Independent International Affairs Analyst. With that, we come to an end for this edition of The Spotlight. From Mikhail Tahway and the team, it's goodbye.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
Indeed, this Quran guides to what is most upright and gives the good news to the faithful who do righteous deeds, that there is a great reward for them.
In the name of Allah, the Compassionate, the Merciful, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum. Welcome to another edition of the program, Insights into the Holy Quran by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom. Please stay with us.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. Hello everyone, brothers and sisters. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi with you with another edition of the program Insights into the Holy Quran. In this edition of the program, we'll try to have a look at the commentary of Chapter Shu'ara, the 26th chapter of the Holy Quran. We'll be back after you listen to the verses we're going to discuss in this episode. Dear listeners, let's listen to 213th verse of Surah Ash-Shu'ara.
A'udhu billahi minash shaitanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim.
In the name of Allah, the entirely merciful, the especially merciful.
فلا تدع مع الله إلها آخر فتكون من المعذبين.
So do not invoke with Allah another deity and thus be among the punished.
The verse says, فلا تدع مع الله إلها آخر فتكون من المعذبين. So call you not upon another God with Allah, lest you will be one of the chastised ones. Dear listeners, in this important verse, after those verses that the Holy Quran answered the big accusation of the pagans about the Holy Quran being sent down by the Satans, this verse is here to say, فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَىٰنَ أَخْرَ. So, call you not upon another God with Allah. So, Allah prohibits the Prophet ﷺ from polytheism so that we can learn, we human beings, that. But the point is that Prophet ﷺ never sought other than Allah even for a moment. So, when the Holy Quran, after all those previous verses, says to the Prophet directly, فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ, this is for us to learn. Because Prophet ﷺ never sought other than Allah. But the point is that after all those words, we understand that the ultimate aim of revelation of the Holy Quran, because the previous verses used to tell us that this Holy Quran is not sent down by the Satans, and they are sent down by the Almighty Allah. And now, فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَىٰنَ أَخْرَ. So it seems that the ultimate aim of revelation of the Holy Quran is monotheism. Now that you know, O the Prophet, now that you know that these words are not the words of the Satans, now that everyone knows, it's time to refer to monotheism. فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ. So call you not upon another God with Allah.
على مر الزمان تألقا وأضاء للدنيا طريقا.
We hope and pray that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala blesses us with the ability to cover more of His divine
word. In this
word.
Series of programs, we will inshallah discuss the Holy Quran with a thematic
approach. We will inshallah discuss the chapter.
تعلقا وتلاه في جنح الدجى متدبرا.
The context in which Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala speaks in this verse is the context of mentioning the ills and problems and evils of the people of the book, the previous nations who have received revelation, and more particularly the Jew.
Now let's listen to some of the verses of the Holy Quran.
First, let's listen to a few verses.
Now let's listen to some verses of the Holy Quran.
Insights into the Holy Quran.
by Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, a graduate of the Hausa Seminary of Qom.
So the verse says, call not another god upon Allah, فَتَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُعَذَّبِينَ, lest you will be of the chastised ones. The leaders of the monotheism must themselves be the first monotheist. So the verse says, فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَٰهًا آخَرَ. If you want to invite the others, if you want to be the leader of monotheism, you must be the first one to be among them. And whatever and whoever is besides Allah is not worthy of worshipping. لَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَٰهًا آخَرَ. Going towards anything other than Allah brings misery and chastisement. فَتَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُعَذَّبِينَ, lest you will be of the chastised ones. So it has been the cause of destruction of the former nations. It has been one of the most important reasons. The previous people, the former nations, were destroyed mostly because they had paganism in themselves. فَلَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ فَتَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُعَذَّبِينَ. This is the result of following anything and other one other than the Almighty Allah. So in this verse, before anything else, Allah invites the Prophet ﷺ to having a firm belief in monotheism. A monotheism that formed the root and basis of the call of all prophets. So it says, لَا تَدْعُ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ. Call not upon another god with Allah. Because إِلَهًا آخَرَ, the god other than Allah, does not have the qualifications to be worshipped. فَتَكُونَ مِنَ الْمُعَذَّبِينَ, lest you will be of the chastised ones. The Prophet of Islam وسلم, was certainly the herald of monotheism, and there was no deviation from this principle considered in him. So the importance of this issue is so much that at first he subhanahu wa ta'ala addresses him concerning this matter in order that other people settle their account. Besides that, improving others must begin by means of self-actualization and self-improvement. So at first, the words are addressing the Holy Prophet himself, فَلَا تَدُعْ مَعَ اللَّهِ إِلَهًا آخَرَ. So call you not upon another god with Allah. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us. وَالسَّلَامُ عَلَيْكُمْ وَرَحْمَةُ اللَّهِ وَبَرَكَاتُهُ.
Don't be saddened by what you see, by all the lies and treachery. Life is cruel, but don't worry. In your heart lies the key to unwind all the secrets. This life we see.
Thank you, dear listeners of IRIB English, for listening to us. If you have any question regarding our programs, feel free to email us at englishradio@irib.ir. Also, visit our website at parstoday.ir. Until the next program, take care.
Things always, but for me, worry ends when faith begins.
Life is full of choices. Choose the best option. Visit us at parstoday.ir/en. IRIB English Radio.
Hmm. Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rashan Saglam, Istanbul.
Sayed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah considered that the developments in the past year have been to the benefit of the resistance front, while the Israeli regime has become weaker than ever before.
There are major transformations that occurred in the last year at the international level and the regional level, while we have also seen major developments with regards to the Israeli regime and Palestine. If we look at all these developments briefly, we can see that the resistance front and the Palestinian cause are in an advanced and advantageous position.
Sayed Nasrallah spoke in a Hezbollah rally marking International Quds Day, where hundreds of Hezbollah supporters and allies congregated in a show of total support for the Palestinian cause. The leader of the resistance highlighted how the main custodian of the Zionists, the U.S., is getting weaker, and the Israeli regime is in a state of disintegration due to its internal rifts and self-destructive policies. He stressed that it is the criminal actions of the Zionists which could drive the region into an all-out war.
I warn the Israelis and tell them to be careful and that they cannot control it if the region explodes based on certain circumstances. And I warn the U.S., which is busy with Russia and China. The Muslim and Christian holy sites in Palestine are a red line that should not be crossed. The Palestinian people are also a red line. It's the regional strategy that we declared and strength, which has protected Al-Quds and will continue to guard it.
With regards to last week's launching of rockets from South Lebanon, Nasrallah noted that the Israeli response was weak since they feared dragging the resistance in Lebanon into a confrontation. Yet he warned of possible security assaults committed by Israel. He therefore declared that the resistance will respond in the suitable method against any attack on anyone living in Lebanon, whether they were Lebanese, Iranian, or Palestinian.
Al-Quds Day in 2023 is no longer merely a day of solidarity speeches and complaints to the United Nations. It has become the reason behind the formation of a powerful military force in defense of Al-Quds, of which Hezbollah is a main component. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
A mass rally was held in Gaza on the last Friday of Ramadan, which coincides with the 44th anniversary of Al-Quds Day. The annual rally comes amid intensified Israeli attacks against the Palestinians in the occupied Palestinian territories. The participants chanted slogans emphasizing their entitlement to Al-Quds and their hopes to pray at the Holy Mosque when it's liberated from the Israeli regime.
Palestinians come out today on the last Friday of Ramadan, on Al-Quds Day, which was first launched by Imam Khomeini in the Islamic Republic of Iran in solidarity with Palestinians. Today's banner reads, West Bank is Al-Quds Shield, which stresses the unity of the Palestinian resistance in Gaza and the West Bank against the Israeli occupation.
The participants denounced the Israeli crimes against the Palestinian people and the Israeli settlers' incursions into Al-Aqsa Mosque compound, reiterating their willingness to respond to any Israeli future attack from all fronts.
We confirm our readiness to defend Al-Quds with all our might against the Israeli occupation. We condemn in the strongest terms the Israeli attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque. We also condemn Israelis' ban on Palestinians who want to pray at the mosque in Ramadan.
After the worldwide condemnation of the savage Israeli attack on the Muslim worshippers at the Holy Mosque, and the resistance operations across the occupied Palestinian territories, including the retaliatory rocket attacks on Israel, the Israeli authorities couldn't help but ban non-Muslims' visit to Al-Aqsa compound at the beginning of the holy month of Ramadan up until the end.
Today, it's a necessity to unite all the resistance fronts and to support the resistance fighters in the West Bank, Al-Quds, and the 1948 occupied Palestinian lands to intensify war against the enemy. On Al-Quds Day, we salute the Islamic Republic of Iran, our martyrs and prisoners, and we will stay committed to their legacy.
People across the globe celebrate the annual Quds Day and voice their support to the oppressed people of Palestine. The day was initiated in 1997 to raise awareness about the Palestinian cause, to remind the international community of the Palestinian suffering, and eventually pave the way for the liberation of Al-Quds from the Israeli occupation.
After they faced the Israeli airstrikes last Friday, Palestinians in Gaza took to the streets on Al-Quds Day in a clear message to the Israeli occupation that the Palestinian land is united against the usurper entity of Israel and its colonial settlers. Al Al-Asib, Gaza.
For the 12th day in 3 months, French unions led a million people in nationwide strikes against President Emmanuel Macron's insistence on raising the retirement age by 2 more years. Polls show that a whopping 70% of France opposes the age hike, and the protests have seen France's now usual police brutality, mass arrests, and the banning of protests.
France is status quo in Taiwan. France supports the One China policy and the search for a peaceful settlement of the situation. This is moreover the position of the Europeans and is a position which has always been compatible with the role of ally.
The pension rollback is on the cusp of becoming law. An executive order eliminated Parliament's role, and a rubber stamp approval from the Constitutional Council is expected shortly. Once again, Macron refused to enter into substantive talks with unions, further undercutting the democratic bona fides of the bill.
We won't stop protesting, no matter what the Constitutional Council says. We can allow a government which refuses to listen to their own people to prevail, and in such an important matter.
Even though a decision from the Constitutional Council has never received such attention before, almost no one expects that they will side with the Democratic majority.
I don't care what the Constitutional Council says. They are all just former politicians, and there aren't even any lawyers among them. It's clear to everybody that our democracy is working very badly. We have a constitution, but it's empty of any spirit.
Enormous protests, a general strike, the introduction of a police state, the historic Yellow Vest repression. For over a decade, nothing has stopped the French government, whether socialist or conservative, from forcing through far-right economics.
It wouldn't feel like spring in the European Union if there weren't major anti-austerity protests. If the pension rollback receives final judicial approval, the unrest may only be getting started. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Thousands of people have gathered in the largest Palestinian refugee community in Syria to mark the International Quds Day. People of all ages chanted slogans to show support for Palestinian people who have been abandoned by the international community to their dire fate. Here at El Yarmouk refugee camp, demonstrators seem to have only one thing in mind, the Palestinian struggle for liberation.
Palestine can only be freed through armed struggle. Resistance is the only path to Palestine. We refuse negotiations, concessions, or normalizations with Israel.
Our message is that on God's Day we renew our adherence to our homeland. We are all with Palestine. We want all of Palestine to be freed without neglecting any inch. This is only possible through resistance.
Palestinian factions based in Syria also joined the rallies by staging military parades around the camp. They assured everyone that despite the silence and inaction of the international community regarding Israeli crimes, resistance against the occupiers would not flag.
The message of Palestinians to the Israeli occupation is that they will not allow Israel to continue the occupation of Al-Quds. We will keep fighting and resisting until all of Palestine is freed. We'll liberate our prisoners. Israel used to say the elderly will die and the youth will forget. But today, as you see, we are all ready to fight.
This is an important day for all Muslims. Palestinians are the first defense line in protecting Al-Quds and Al-Aqsa. That's why all Muslims must work toward liberating Palestine. We look forward for more support for Palestinians who go through immense pain and suffering on a daily basis.
The El Yarmouk refugee camp symbolizes Palestinians' return to their homeland. People here have been forcibly displaced twice, once in the early days of the occupation and a second time, which took place at the hands of Israeli-backed terrorists in Syria. It's a day millions of people rally across the world for the just Palestinian cause. Here, Palestinian refugees marched to express belief that one day they will return home and regain their rights by force from Israel. Hamad Ali, El Yarmouk Refugee Camp, Damascus.
Voices of solidarity with Palestinians once again resonated in Iran on International Quds Day. Every year, the occasion brings millions of people to the streets. They condemn the Israeli occupation of Palestinian land and its crimes against the Palestinian people.
We're here to call on Western leaders to adopt an all-inclusive, non-selective approach towards human rights, one that would see no difference between the suffering of Palestinians and Ukrainians.
Addressing the demonstrators, Iran's parliament speaker, Mohammad Bagher Ghalibaf, noted that the Palestinian resistance groups have taught a lesson to the Zionist regime, and the Quds Day showed us that resistance is the only way to our success and progress.
Today, Quds is a center of the Intifada. Now, from Gaza to the West Bank, even in the heart of Tel Aviv, Palestinian resistance fighters have stood up against the regime. If they used to fight with the stones, today they are standing against the Zionist enemy with rockets. And now the Palestinian groups are stronger than any other time.
This year's Quds Day is marked as Muslims are infuriated by Israel's fresh spate of raids on Palestinian worshippers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. In the past weeks, the regime has intensified its violence in the occupied Palestinian territories.
The Quds Day has turned into a global pro-Palestine rally. Even Jews around the world participate in demonstrations to denounce the Israeli occupation and raise awareness of the Palestinian suffering. If it wasn't for the Quds Day, the Palestinian cause could have slipped into oblivion.
In early days, after the victory of Iran's Islamic Revolution, the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini, stated that one of his goals was the liberation of Palestine from the Israeli occupying regime. But when Israel launched a new raid on the south of Lebanon on August 7, 1979, Imam Khomeini named the last Friday of the month of Ramadan as Al-Quds Day.
Iranians believe that the International Quds Day is the embodiment of Muslims' vigilance against Israeli atrocities, which shows that the plight of Palestinians will never be forgotten. Saman Kujuri, Tehran.
A symbol of unity in the Muslim world, Al-Quds is a common heritage for followers of Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And every year, on the occasion of International Quds Day, this becomes the topic of discussion in conferences that are usually held a day before. This year is no different. Political figures and activists gathered in Imam Rizal's holy shrine to emphasize the same persistent and unchangeable policy of supporting the liberation of Al-Quds and the legitimate resistance of the Palestinian nation.
The freedom of Al-Quds is not just a Palestinian issue. It is an issue for all Muslims and freedom seekers all over the world. It is what we all pray for.
The legacy of the late founder of the Islamic Republic, Imam Khomeini.
The last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan is designated as International Quds Day in solidarity with Palestinians. On this day, mass rallies are held worldwide in all major cities.
International Quds is very important for us, for all of the Muslims in the world, because Quds have to be free.
The main purpose of this conference is to shed light on the plight of Palestinians as an issue of high priority in the Muslim world, and also discuss how Quds Day rallies have raised public opinion on the sufferings of the Palestinians.
The Palestinian resistance movement is bearing fruit thanks to the annual International Quds Day rallies. We can already see how it has raised public awareness, which in turn has had a direct effect, particularly on the economic activities of the Zionist regime. The political changes that you see in the region are a result of that.
According to the participants of this conference, International Quds Day this year is even more significant because of the recent regional and international developments, and it also sends a very strong message to the world. Gisumi Shah Ahmadi, Mashhad.
In a recent statement, the UN has announced that it is reviewing its presence in Afghanistan.
The recent announcement comes after the Taliban authorities banned Afghan women from working for the UN in the country. The organization claims that the ban is unlawful under international law, including the UN Charter, and for that reason the body cannot comply. Experts say the UN might be affected by political interference at this point.
When the UN was founded, its goal was to work towards global peace, to control crises in countries, but unfortunately it is affected by some now. For example, the five members in the UN Security Council, if the interests of one of these countries bend towards a certain path, the UN shows flexibility. The UN, as an impartial organization, has responsibility towards Afghanistan. Historically speaking, the UN has always been unsuccessful in controlling the crisis in the country. And now more pressure and sanctions on the Islamic Emirate isn't called crisis control, but crisis intensifier.
The Taliban calls the ban an internal matter, religious and cultural issue. Taliban says that they do not want to create an obstacle for the UN. In a statement, the spokesman of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan, Zabihullah Mujahid, demanded all parties to respect the decision made by the Islamic Emirate. Experts say both sides should show flexibility and cooperate for the sake of the nation to manage the problem.
To manage this issue, the UN and the IEA both should show flexibility. They should reach a mutual agreement that doesn't violate each side's laws. If the UN shuts down its operations in Afghanistan while the country is in poverty and is in dire need of UN services, the poverty rate would be increased and it might impact the women whom are the neediest.
The UN has in its statement threatened that any negative consequences of this crisis for the Afghan people will be the responsibility of the de facto rulers. However, the Islamic Emirate has replied by saying that those who have imposed restrictions on the financial and banking system of Afghanistan, crippling the economy in the first place, should be blamed. The UN has initiated an operational review period during which consultations and adjustments will be made. May 5th is the expected date to see what would the UN and the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan determine on this issue. Abdullah Amirzadeh, Kabul.
Iranians have held mass rallies in the capital, Tehran, to mark the anniversary of International Quds Day. Some participants carried flags and held up signs in support of Palestine, while others chanted anti-Israel and anti-US slogans. They expressed solidarity with Palestinians striving to liberate their ancestral homeland from Israeli occupation.
All the Iranian people are here today to demonstrate their support for the innocent Palestinian people and to condemn the savagery of the Israeli forces. And the Palestine has been the homeland of the Palestinians. And the Israeli regime, the Zionist regime, has occupied it by force, by pouring money into the international communities, and by lobbying. And Quds will be free very soon, inshallah.
In most countries, including Iran, the event takes place on the last Friday of the holy month of Ramadan every year. It's a symbol of unity as well as solidarity with the oppressed and resilient people of Palestine.
In my opinion, the issue of Palestine is of great importance for all people across the world. On behalf of the freedom seekers of the world, Iranians have gathered here today. These people are all supporters of oppressed people of Palestine and blast the tyranny and the crimes of the Israel regime.
The people of Palestine are not alone, and today not only Muslims, but the whole world is behind them. And we all condemn Israel. We will soon witness the downfall of this bloody regime, and the Palestinians will get their home back. Such blatant oppression cannot and will not go on forever.
This year's rallies come amid simmering tensions in the occupied Palestinian territories and attacks on worshippers in the Al-Aqsa Mosque. However, demonstrators in Tehran said Israel is on the verge of destruction as it is facing growing resistance from Palestinians.
Israel is a cancerous tumor. One might ask, how can we remove this cancerous tumor? Well, with faith, solidarity, and resistance of the Islamic world, the demise of Israel is imminent. Every time Israelis violate the rights of Palestinians, they take one step closer to the downfall of the regime.
Demonstrators in Tehran also demanded the liberation of Palestine and called on countries across the world to boycott the Israeli regime.
The International Quds Day is the very epitome of unity in the Islamic world and also a symbol for seeking justice by all the oppressed and freedom seekers around the world. Today, once again, Iranians showed their unwavering support for Palestinians and urged them to move forward and continue their resistance against Israel. Mahdi Abbasian, Tehran.
In the limelight.
Britain's economy has been facing record high inflation in recent months, with many workers going on strike and protest. The skyrocketing inflation rate, soaring above 10%, has led to a surge in food and energy prices in Britain. We take a look at the World Press and Media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has covered this story and tells us more. Official figures have revealed Britain's economy failed to grow in February after being hit by the effects of strikes across the public sector and weakness in industrial output. The Office for National Statistics, ONS, said on Thursday, 13th of April, that the growth rate remained unchanged in February, falling below forecast in a Reuters poll. Expectations for a 0.1% rise in activity. Darren Morgan, Director of Economic Statistics at the Office for National Statistics, ONS, says strikes by civil servants and teachers held back growth in the economy in February. The comments came hours after Chancellor Jeremy Hunt claimed the United Kingdom would do significantly better than the International Monetary Fund forecast. On Tuesday, 11th of April, that the economy was expected to shrink by as much as 0.3% this year. The International Monetary Fund forecast that Britain's economy would shrink as the worst performance of any G7 economy, putting Britain at the bottom of the world's major economies in terms of expected economic growth in 2023. Despite February's poor performance, Jeremy Hunt claimed Britain's economic outlook was brighter than expected and that gross domestic product GDP, the measure of economic growth, had grown by 0.1% in the 3 months to February. Jeremy Hunt, who was brought in to revamp The British economy, after a market rout under its predecessor, claimed, "We are set to avoid recession thanks to the steps we have taken through a massive package of cost-of-living support for families and radical reforms to boost the jobs market and business investment." Hunt added, the opposition Labour Party's Shadow Chancellor Rachel Reeves in a statement said the figures showed the economy was slowing down. Despite our enormous promise and potential as a country, Britain is lagging behind on the global stage with growth on the floor.